The security guard walked the empty wing of the old San Jacinto Mall with slow, careful steps. The place had been closed for years. Dust covered the tiles. The lights flickered. He was used to the silence, but this night felt different. He could hear something faint ahead. A drip. A scrape. Something that did not belong in an abandoned building at 1 in the morning on December 4, 2022. He turned the corner and froze. A phone lay on the floor with the screen lit. It showed a missed call from earlier that night. A pink backpack leaned against a broken bench. A denim jacket half covered the tiles. The guard called out, but no one answered. He lifted his radio with a shaking hand. When he stepped closer, he saw a figure just beyond the shadows. A teenage girl. Still. Silent. And in that moment, he understood this was no accident. This was a trap someone had set. Chapter 1. The last night. The news spread through Baytown before sunrise. A teenage girl had been found dead inside the abandoned San Jacinto Mall. Her name was Jada Spain. 16 years old, a junior at Lincoln High School. She had vanished the night before after telling her mother she was going to meet friends for a quick bite at the plaza near Garth Road. She never came home. By 7:30 that morning, police blocked the mall's north entrance. Officers moved in and out with steady focus. Reporters arrived soon after, staying behind the tape. The story had weight. A teen gone. A sealed mall broken into. A body discovered alone. Parents across town checked on their children. Teachers watched their students with new concern. Detectives Carla Ramos and Ben Cray were assigned to take the lead. They walked into the mall's east wing where the security guard had found Jada. The place smelled of dust and old metal. Light came through cracks in the boarded entrances. The floor was cracked. Stores stood like hollow shells. The quiet was heavy. Jada lay near a row of old benches. Her phone was on the ground. The faint screen light had been what caught the guard's attention. Her pink backpack was beside her, zipped only halfway. Nothing appeared stolen. Her wallet was inside. Her ID was inside. Her small chain bracelet was still on her wrist. Detective Cray crouched down beside her. He noted her clothing, her posture, the stillness in her face. Detective Ramos observed the floor. She noticed faint smudges near the bench legs. Not clear footprints, but something disturbed the dust. They both felt the same unspoken thought. Someone had been here with her. Ramos walked the perimeter of the scene. She found a broken door at the back of an old shoe store. The padlock had been cut. Inside the small room, there were 2 discarded energy drink cans and a fast food napkin. None belonged to Jada. She had been missing only hours. Whoever had been here had either waited for her or brought her inside. Outside, Jada's mother, Elena Spain, arrived. She held her coat tightly around her. Her voice shook when she spoke to officers. She had reported Jada missing around 9:30 the night before. The last text she received from her daughter came at 8:47. It read, "On my way. Be home soon." She never arrived. Detective Ramos stepped outside to speak with Elena. She moved gently. She explained the steps they were taking. Elena answered every question through tears. She said Jada had not mentioned new friends or arguments. She had plans for school. She had an upcoming test. She had been her usual self. But Elena did mention one thing, a girl named Mariah, 17, former friend. There had been a falling out 2 months earlier over a boy named Trent Lawson. They had been part of the same friend group. Arguments followed, cold shoulders at school, rumors. Jada told her mother she had moved on from the drama. Now, hearing her mother speak the names, Detective Ramos felt the first line of direction. The tension among teenagers often ran deeper than adults realized. Back inside, Detective Cray followed a faint trail leading toward the old food court. It was not footprints exactly, but uneven dust, enough movement to suggest someone had walked there after Jada fell. He photographed the markings. He also noted one small detail. A thin line in the dust that looked like something had been dragged. Not a body. Something smaller. Maybe a bag or piece of clothing. Near the food court counter, he found a cracked phone case charm, shaped like a yellow star. He pocketed it carefully for the evidence team. It did not match Jada's items. By late afternoon, detectives began questioning classmates. Lincoln High School buzzed with whispers. Students crowded hallways. Some cried. Some speculated. Some barely looked up from their phones. Teenagers processed fear differently. Detective Ramos met Mariah first. The The girl sat stiffly in a chair at the station with her arms crossed. Her hair was tied tightly in a bun. Her eyes stayed on the table. She spoke clearly, but with an edge. She said she had not spoken to Jada since the falling out. She said she stayed home all night on December 3. She said her mother could vouch for her. She repeated it several times. Still home. Still home. All night. But something felt off in her tone. Not guilt. Something else. A mixture of anger and fear. When asked about the boy, Trent Lawson, Mariah stiffened. She said they had already broken up. She said Trent had started asking about Jada again only weeks earlier. She insisted she did not care anymore. Detective Ramos kept her expression calm. She asked how she felt when she heard what happened to Jada. Mariah's eyes shifted for the first time. They softened. Her voice dropped. She said she did not think anything like this would happen. She said she thought the drama was over long ago. When Ramos left the room, she shared a quiet thought with Cray. None of this was clean. High school jealousy rarely vanished on its own. Someone still held resentment. Someone had drawn Jada out that night. Detective Cray spoke next with Trent. The boy looked shaken but cooperative. 17. He sat in the chair with his hands clenched together. His voice cracked when he spoke her name. He said he had been with friends at a basketball practice. He showed messages confirming his location. He said he cared about Jada, but they had not been together recently. When asked whether Jada feared anyone, Trent hesitated. He said she had mentioned a girl who was angry at her, but he refused to say more without thinking. His hesitation made the detectives look at each other. That evening, the detectives returned to the mall. The building stood cold and dark. They walked the east wing again. Ramos replayed Jada's final hours. Cray studied the dust patterns near the benches. The markings suggested more than one person had walked away from the scene. And then he noticed something near the corner. A partial shoe mark on the tile. Small, narrow, possibly female. Not a clean print, but enough to show direction. Someone had left through the service corridor. The chapter closed with Ramos stepping out of the mall and looking into the night. She understood that someone had lured Jada here. Not randomly, not by chance. The first turn in the case had arrived. But the question that mattered now was simple. Who walked out of this mall after Jada died? Chapter 2, The Circle of Lies. Detectives Ramos and Cray spent the next 2 days mapping the friend group. The circle included 17s, some close, some distant, all connected by parties, school hallways, social media, and shifting alliances. The detectives studied their messages, calls, and online posts. Patterns formed quickly. The final text Jada sent before disappearing was to someone saved as just T, not Trent, not a friend, just T. The message read, "At the mall. Come through the east side, 5 minutes." The detectives found no earlier messages with this contact. The profile had been created only 4 days before Jada died. A fake account. Detective Ramos sat with this information quietly. She thought back to the break in the store at the mall. Someone had prepared a place to meet. Someone had brought energy drinks. Someone had waited. Detective Cray reviewed surveillance footage from outside stores near the mall area. One camera at a gas station across the street captured a figure walking toward the mall at 8:21 on December 3. The figure appeared to be a teenage girl wearing a hooded jacket and carrying a small bag. The camera quality was poor, but the height and build were consistent with Mariah. However, the footage did not show her face. When questioned again, Mariah denied leaving her house. Her mother backed her. But her mother had been working a late shift at a nearby diner and returned home at 10:40 that night. Mariah had several hours unaccounted for. Detective Ramos leaned in during the second interview. She spoke calmly. She asked simple questions. She watched the girl's eyes. Mariah insisted she stayed home, but her voice lacked the steady tone it carried earlier. Detectives then spoke with Aiden, a friend of both girls. He had grown nervous since the morning of the discovery. He said he had not been near the mall. He said he barely talked to Jada anymore, but his online posts told a different story. Only 1 week before her disappearance, he had argued publicly with someone in the group. His post read, "I'm done with lies. I'm done picking sides." When pressed, Aiden admitted there had been tension. He said Jada told him she suspected someone was spreading rumors about her and Trent. He said she had received messages from an unknown account telling her to watch her back. Detective Cray wrote this down carefully. Meanwhile, Detective Ramos re-examined the phone charm found in the food court. She showed it to the group of teens separately. Most shook their heads. They said they had never seen it. But one girl reacted differently. Her name was Kaylee. She was quiet. She sat apart from the others. When she saw the charm, her face changed. She said it looked like one she used to keep on her old phone. She said she lost it weeks ago. She said she did not go to the mall that night. Her voice shook as she spoke. Detective Ramos noted that carefully. The detectives expanded the search. They reviewed more footage from nearby businesses. One camera showed two figures near the mall's side entrance at 8:43. Both teenagers, both wearing hooded jackets, one taller, one shorter. One carried a backpack that matched Kaylee's. The shorter figure had the same narrow build seen in the dusty shoe mark. Neither figure faced the camera. The detectives brought Kaylee back in. They asked where she had been on December 3. She said she was home playing games. She said she had no reason to be near the mall. But her hands trembled. Her breathing sped up. She stared at the table and did not look at the detectives. Cray showed her the footage. She went silent. She asked for a moment. She pressed her fingers against her forehead. Then she said she wanted to tell the truth, but she did not want to get anyone in trouble. Detective Ramos leaned forward and told her that someone already was. Kaylee began to speak. She said she had met with Mariah earlier that evening. She said Mariah was angry at Jada. She said Mariah wanted to talk to her at the mall, away from everyone else. She said she followed because she did not want her friend going alone. Kaylee then said they waited in the mall for Jada. She admitted the cut lock had been Mariah's idea. They brought drinks and waited inside the old shoe store. But according to her, things changed once Jada arrived. She said Mariah snapped. She said the argument between them escalated. She said she tried to calm them down. But she insisted she never laid a hand on Jada. Detective Cray asked her one question. Who made the fake account? Kaylee hesitated again. She swallowed hard. Then she said she thought Mariah did. She said Mariah used a prepaid phone. She said Mariah told her it was just to get Jada to come talk. She said she did not think anything serious would happen. Detective Ramos wrote it all down. They brought Mariah back in, this time with everything laid out. The footage, the charm, the message trail, the statements from Kaylee. When they confronted her, she denied all of it. She said Kaylee was lying. She said she was being framed. She said she never went to the mall and never made a fake account. Her voice rose, then cracked, then she went quiet. Detective Ramos asked the question that mattered most. Why did she still care this much about Jada? Mariah did not answer. Later that evening, detectives returned to the mall one more time. They reviewed the scene again. Something bothered Cray. The energy drink cans in the shoe store. They had fingerprints. Not clear prints, but partials. Enough to exclude Jada. Enough to include one of the girls. Enough to narrow the story. Then they found a small tear in the denim jacket near where Jada had fallen. A missing button. A silver one. They found a similar button in the dust near the shoe store doorway. Ramos stood in the silence of the mall, replaying the argument described by Kaylee. Voices rising, anger swelling, a push, a fall, a panic, a rushed exit. The chapter closed with a revelation neither detective wanted to voice out loud, but both understood clearly. The truth had not yet surfaced, but the circle was cracking, and someone inside that circle was lying to survive. Chapter 3. The Break. On the morning of December 10, detectives received the lab results on the partial prints found on the energy drink cans. They belonged to Mariah. Combined with the footage, the proximity of the charm, and the recovered button matching her jacket from earlier posts, the picture sharpened. Still, they needed clarity. They needed the moment. They brought Mariah in one last time. This time, her mother sat beside her. The detectives laid out everything. Kaylee's statement, the footage, the digital trail, the small details from the mall. They explained that they believed the argument escalated. They believed Jada fell backward near the bench. They believed it was an accident fueled by anger. Mariah stared ahead. Her jaw trembled. She asked what would happen if she told the truth. Ramos answered gently. They needed to know what happened. All of it. Mariah exhaled slowly. Her voice cracked. She said she never meant for anything to happen. She said she only wanted to confront Jada. She said she wanted the rumors to stop. She said she wanted her side heard. Then she said the line that broke through everything. She said, "I pushed her. She fell. I panicked. I ran." Her mother covered her face. Detective Ramos kept her tone calm. She asked what happened after. Mariah said she checked Jada once, but she did not respond. She said she thought she was unconscious. She said she did not understand how badly she was hurt. She said she ran with Kaylee. She said they made a pact to stay quiet. Detectives wrote everything down. Later that afternoon, Kaylee also gave a full statement. She confirmed the argument. She confirmed the shove. She said she begged Mariah to get help, but Mariah ran. She said she followed out of fear. She said she wanted to tell someone sooner, but she was afraid of what Mariah would do. The case moved quickly after that. The district attorney determined the act was not premeditated. It was charged as manslaughter. The town felt a wave of shock and grief. Two families shattered, one life gone, another changed forever. Friends stood confused, angry, and broken. Teenagers who thought they understood loyalty saw how fast anger could cost someone everything. Detective Ramos visited the mall one last time before the case file closed. She walked the east wing as morning light slipped through the cracks. She stopped near the benches. She looked at the place where a young life had ended. She thought about how easily the tragedy could have been avoided. Words instead of rage. Distance instead of confrontation. Outside, Jada's mother held a small memorial near the mall entrance. Flowers, candles, photos. Friends spoke quietly about who Jada was, her laugh, her kindness, her plans, her future. The story closed on a simple truth. The lies, jealousy, and hurt that built the trap inside that mall never had to grow into anything more. But they did. And the cost was written in the grief carried by everyone who loved her. The unanswered question lingered as Detective Ramos walked away. How many quiet feuds in small towns would end before someone else fell?